Today on The Breakdown, it's a hand from the Game of Gold. And it's the man from the Game of Gold. Is he man? Is he monster? Or is he both? It's the Incredible Bulk, Jason Kuhn, showing just why he is Kuhn-tastic. Yeah, that's right. I got a smile out of Grant on that one. He wasn't ready for that one. I wasn't either, Grant. And he's up against main event runner-up David Williams from 2004. And we're going to see, I think, a divergence in terms of skills and perspectives and decision-making and all the things, a wide gulf in all these things. I believe I am been known to be wrong, but while I have even been thinking about these things, and you've been listening to this, Jason Kuhn has done 10 more pull-ups. Congratulations. You're going to live forever, kid. All right. On The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey. If you, Jason Kuhn knows who we are.
Yeah.
But we haven't like met him.
No.
It might be a little weird one day when you meet Jason Kuhn, if you do.
When I'm like, you're going to live forever, kid.
And you're always talking about his body, basically. Yeah.
I mean, that's everyone, I'm sure, is doing that. He's so big. He's all muscly. Come on.
Yeah.
It's noticeable.
Good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not the only thing we talk about when it comes to Jason Kuhn. We also talk about his excellence. Where would you put him in the top? If you had to just... Right now, tournament players in the world, what ranking is he? Where would you put him?
I have no idea.
I understand. Live tournament. Come on.
If there was like, okay, I'm going to try to create the parameters for this so that I can wrap my head around it.
Okay.
So it's like there's some sort of godlike creature who actually knows the rankings, and I don't yet know the rankings, and I get to guess where he fits in the rankings.
Yes, the godlike creature is me.
Oh, so you actually know where he
fits. I know where he actually sits.
It was like 13th.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. 11. But yeah, okay. Pretty good. Okay. Yeah. He's somewhere between like, what, 5 and 20, right? We don't actually
know. He's probably somewhere between 1 and 20.
Okay. Fair enough.
Like, we can never really know who the best is because poker is a game of runs and variants and stuff.
So. You're right. He actually could be number one. Yeah. You're totally right. And I was thinking of him in terms of live play because if we include all the online crushers too, I don't know. Anymore, it's between 1 and 50. Maybe it's hard to say. Live is part of the set of skills, and he has that too.
It's hard to imagine that the online crushers, who are really the best online crushers in the world, aren't also trying their hand at the bigger money that's available in the live high roller scene.
They very well may be, but they may not be doing that much of it because, for whatever reason, they prefer online, or you know, they've got other things going.
Because they can RTA online.
Perhaps, yeah. But whatever their reasons, I mean, you can get a lot more volume, of course. Like, you don't have to spend 4 days playing a tournament online, right? I mean, that's kind of nice. And you can play several tournaments all at the same time and so on and so forth. You don't have to travel. There's a lot of good stuff.
But it's boring.
I mean, I think there's a case to be made. Some people would say it's all boring.
Live poker has its excitement.
At moments, so does online poker.
If you're winning money, it can be exciting.
Okay, so you think if you're losing in live poker, it's exciting?
No, but I think it's more fun than losing online.
I think this is just Grant's rules. We're playing by Grant's rules right now.
We're playing by Grant is correct and you're a dum-dum.
Remember, I'm the godlike figure who knows things.
I didn't say things. You only know the actual definitive rankings of who are the best tournament players.
I feel like there was an implication that I knew everything else as well.
See, this is the problem. You are... What is it, what the kids call it? Green-red? You're so green-red on this.
Whoa, what does that mean?
Like you have like an elite...
Stop-go?
You have like an elite skill, but everything else is terrible. Like the opposite of a jack-of-all-trades.
A green-red?
I think that's what it is.
What the hell?
Yeah.
That better be right.
It might be wrong.
I'm going to start using that now.
You're the opposite of a jack-of-all-trades. Your one good skill is knowing the exact definitive rankings of tournament players.
Yeah.
Everything else is really bad. Really bad.
But that's a good skill. That has value. I could make money. That's a job.
You would think that you could make money on it, but guess what? Monetizing is a different thing. So you're terrible at that.
I need someone else to sort of discover me and be like, we'll do this
with
you.
Yeah, they have to discover you because you would, if you sought somebody out, you would find the wrong person because you would be bad at finding
right.
the person.
Right, yeah. I mean, some of that echoes true for me. You know?
Yeah.
I have a particular set of skills.
Yeah. Are you Liam Neeson?
You're going to be taken.
Different phone calls. Those are two different phone calls.
Same phone call, actually. Different listeners.
That's true. That's true, but you also did it in the reverse order, which is confusing.
Oh, so that's why it's, they're different phone calls?
Is Taken a fucking Christopher Nolan movie where time is irrelevant? Is that what you're telling me?
I mean, time is not irrelevant.
Chronology doesn't matter.
In a Christopher Nolan movie, time is very relevant.
It's easier to think of it as irrelevant in most cases.
I'm excited for the Christopher Nolan movies that don't involve weird time stuff. I guess Oppenheimer doesn't, and all those like more historical epics don't, but they also are making... They're doing, you haven't seen Oppenheimer, but
no.
What's the one with the English and the war and the owl? They're all on the island and oh no, it's kind of boring. And
oh yeah, that one.
Yeah. Both of them are basically happening on three timelines and we're sort of jumping back and forth between all three.
Yeah, so he can't help but put his finger on time somehow.
Exactly.
He has to fuck with time.
No, yeah, I will tell the story non-linearly one way or another. Exactly.
I guess in the Batman movies, it was linear.
Yes, that is the one example. The most... like broad facing,
yeah.
Four quadrant type thing. He's like, all right, fine. I guess Insomnia, which is one of his older movies, wasn't time based at all.
Fine, I won't make Bruce Wayne a fucking time bandit. Damn it.
I did love Time Bandits as a child. But anyway, that's
Christopher Nolan movie.
It's a movie. I'm excited for whatever Christopher Nolan does next, okay?
So is Chris Jones.
So is Jason Koon.
Chris Jones suggested this hand.
Yeah.
Making him better than Jason Koon at suggesting hands for the breakdown.
Truth.
Yeah. So congratulations, Chris Jones. You're red-greening the situation.
Nice. Is that like a thing like little kids? Like people say to little kids?
I don't think so. No, I think it's like, you know, it might not be red-green, but it's something like that. I probably sound so ignorant if it's wrong, but I don't care. But I think it's born of video game stats, like attributes in a video game. Like if you're going to make a character, you make them like super good at one thing, but everything else is bad type of thing. Yeah.
The slider, the attribute slider.
Yeah, like
so
Chris
cool.
Jones, who suggested this on Discord. He's actually good at two things. He's good at using Discord, signing up, typing on there, and also suggesting hands.
Well, that's two more skills than dead people have.
It depends on your view of, you know, the afterlife.
Possibly.
You don't
right.
know.
Maybe not. Okay. I'm sorry, dead people. I should have said that.
Never compare Chris Jones to dead people. It's offensive to dead people.
That is just, not fair to dead people at all. Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, sorry, Chris Jones. All right, 20K, 40K. We're playing Game of Gold, so there's all sorts of silly rules, but whatever. The point is, it's just poker.
It's a sit-and-go. It's a four-handed sit-and-go, and the only thing that's in play here is there's team points as well as individual points. So you want to do as well as you can in the sit-and-go. You get extra stuff for that, and you want to do, and your team also gets stuff. And the only thing that matters with this is the team that does the worst of the four is going to be out. This is the last of the four sit-and-goes, and Jason Koon actually needs to win the sit-and-go. Otherwise, his team will be eliminated.
So there is
a little bit going on.
So
there
is something where he might play slightly different in some spots than he would if it were a simple sit and go.
I think he has to up the variance. He's got to make more bigger plays for sure. Like I don't know if he's really done it yet, but I think in general, yes.
If it were a six-handed winner-take-all sit-and-go, you think about it that way, I guess, for the strategy. It's the same strategy that would go into a winner-take-all.
Right, so you up the variance, right? You're much happier to take a flip
because
it doesn't matter, right? Like you're going to... You know, a flip is good. Half the time you double your chips and you got a much better chance of winning the thing and you've eliminated someone. It's amazing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. So Koon has 1.5 million at 20K, 40K.
Okay. So he's got 37 and a half blinds.
Right. He's got King 8 off on the button. King of Spades, 8 of Clubs. He's going to open to 80K.
Okay.
Cool. David Williams is in the big blind. Small blind folds. David Williams.
Yes.
Talk about David Williams.
I still remember when he called it all off in the World Series of Poker... when he had like three deuce and the board paired on the river. It was like the board was something like 5-5-3-deuce.
Well, yeah, this is
like
the
nine or something.
Well, this is the last hand of the tournament.
Yeah, that's
right?
What I'm saying. Yeah. And like
this was in our book. We did this hand in our book.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that call is just like, and he called right away. He called almost instantly. And that was just so, at that time, that was weird to me. It continues to just be so odd to me that. Like, he got counterfeited. His two pair is not as strong. He just has, fourth pair now on the board. That's it. Like, we should at least think about it.
If you, Jonathan Levy, would read our book, which came out in 2019.
I've not read it.
Of course not. But we actually talked about this hand extensively, of course, because we wrote about it in the book. And you came in with the perception that David Williams played terribly in the hand.
Yeah.
And we completely changed that perception.
Oh, is that because... Fossilman ends up being so polarized that it's like it's a fairly.
I don't remember the exact reasons, but it was like actually this makes kind of it, not necessarily straightforward, but it's like it makes sense to call.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
All right. Good job, David Williams. I take it all back. You're fine.
The thing with you that sucks for people is that they could be vindicated at one point in your mind, and you'll just forget. You'll just totally forget. Like, if you're one of the Duke lacrosse players, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Like,
those, of course, those fucking guys. Did you read about? Okay. Has that ever, that must have happened with you a few times, right? Where you felt vindicated with me. I acknowledged something, and then, like, at some point, I'm like, what the fuck is your problem? And bringing something up that had already been resolved.
Yep.
So that's happened?
Yeah.
Can you name it
I can't
safely
name
on the air?
It. No, I can't name it.
Is it just because you don't know what it is right now?
Yeah, okay. But I know the feeling.
Is that just like a, do you just feel like betrayed? Is it like a righteous thing?
No, it's just a little annoying.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a carnival of possibility.
Well, let's see. So is David Williams when he plays poker.
Yeah.
And he's going to enter the pot with the 8-10 off from the big blind, which is normal. That's fine.
He calls. Min raise, come on.
He's got $3 million. He's got double coon stack.
So okay.
He, you know, doing well. 200K in the pot.
Yes.
The flop is 8 of spades, 6 of clubs, ace of diamonds. They both flop middle pair. Bad news for Williams.
Yeah.
Who checks?
Sure.
How are you sizing his coon?
Ace, 8-6. This is good for us.
Are you sometimes checking?
I think we're almost always betting this.
He has king eight, by the way, for those who forgot.
Yes. I think we're almost always betting this. One, because it's a good flop for our range. Two, because this is a deny equity spot. Three, because there's value to be had. Like, we can get value from worse eights, from sixes, and from straight draws, right?
Yeah.
So I think we're just betting and not worrying about it.
Mm-hmm.
So how am I sizing it? I would size... small-ish. So there's 200K in the pot. I feel like 70K is fine. 60K is okay even. Stuff like that.
And you would be allowed to because in Game of Gold, they have 5K chips
they
forever.
They actually have 10K chips.
10K chips.
That's the thing that's upsetting to you.
It's upsetting to more than just me. Where
have they, they also have a 50K chip. How about that? It's weird. It's a red chip.
A 10K chip and a 50K chip in a tournament setting for no limit hold'em. Like there are some games where there are $10 chips or 10K chips or whatever.
Well, $10 chips for sure.
Yeah, for like PLO and stuff. But
well, also just like limit hold'em at Bellagio. They have
limit hold'em, sure, yeah. But in no limit hold'em, it's always 5, 1, 5, 25, 100.
I don't know if that's true. I think the $10 chips are in play at Bellagio, period.
They might be in play, but if you sign up for an unlimited hold'em game, they're not giving you any unless you ask for them.
If you're playing in the bigger games, I don't know if that's true. But let's not get caught up in that alley, that cul-de-sac. Who cares?
I do. Why would there be $10 chips in the bigger games? Explain.
If you're playing 10-20, for example.
Okay, I could see that.
All right, there we go. I explained.
Yeah.
Moving on.
But okay, but in a tournament, you never see 10K.
No, you never do.
And you never see 50K.
Of course, you're right.
It's always 100, 500, 1K, 5K, 25, 100K, et cetera.
Yep.
Yeah. Strange.
I do appreciate the immediate capitulation, though, on the other part.
Yeah.
That's good. All right.
Anyway, Kuhn bets half pot. It's got to be fine. 100K.
I'm surprised he goes as big as he does, but it's got to be fine.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he's just like, if I have David Williams beat, I can definitely get called for 100K. I don't know.
He may also feel like Williams doesn't have very many aces because it's buttoned to big blind, and he thinks Williams is going to 3-bet a lot of his aces.
Yeah.
So now, if Williams is calling, he just wants to charge more, especially where he may... My guess, if he knows anything about David Williams, which I don't know how much he knows, is that he may know David Williams is a little more of a station than some other players, which he definitely proved to be throughout this entire show, I'll say that. So sizing up is fine. Like, he's going to be insensitive to that.
It might also be because of the chips. He's like, I don't want to fucking think about these chips anymore. Just put out a number that I understand.
He could have just thrown out a 50K. But anyway, but whatever. 100K, it's perfect. Like, we're going to get some real value now.
And it would be surprising for David Williams to do anything but call.
It would.
With the middle pair.
Feels like the only play.
That's what Williams does. He calls.
We're definitely winning a reasonable amount here as David Williams.
Not this time. Kuhn has king 8. Williams has 10-8 on ace 8-6 rainbow.
Okay.
400K in the pot. 5 of spades on the turn. That is a pretty wet card. 7-9 gets there. Some two pairs get there, etc.
Yeah.
You shook your head like no almost. But then you said yeah.
I mean, it's a wet-ish card. It's not very
Name
wet.
A wetter card.
Name a wetter card. Yeah. A 7.
Right. Okay. How about another one?
a 9.
Uh-huh. That's the same as this, so
continue. No, it's bigger. A 9 isn't bigger than a 5.
It's not wetter.
Everyone, look on your calculators.
A 9 and a 5 are the same wetness on this board, and you fucking know it.
All right. It's just still, it's not like a super scary card. That's all.
Okay. I take issue that I called it a wet card, and it is the, in the category of the second most wet possible card for this board, and you're like, nah, it's not.
I actually didn't say either one. I had a slight facial reaction.
Yeah, and you know what?
And you wanted to talk about it. I didn't say anything. I was letting it go.
It's because this happens all the time. All the time. You underestimate board wetness. And it's a fucking chronic issue.
I don't think this is true. I think this is false.
Yeah, well, somebody call it. Chris Jones, call it off. You have Chris Jones for sure has a montage of you underestimating.
Bring it on, Chris Jones.
Yeah.
Me and the dead people have got more skills. Better skills.
All right, so 5 of spades comes.
Okay.
7-9 gets there, 2 pairs get there, et cetera, et cetera. It should hit Williams a bit more than Kuhn, although I'm not sure if it does, because the 2 pair stuff might get there more frequently for Williams because he has more coordinated hands in his range. Not Williams.
No, Kuhn. Kuhn does, right? Kuhn's the guy who's got 5-6 more.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant to say, is that Kuhn's range is made up of a bigger percentage of coordinated hands.
Yeah, like more connecting type cards, where Williams is going to have like, 10-7 off and stuff like that.
Kuhn might have 10-7 off. I'm not sure.
Okay, but you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
10-6 off.
Yeah. Yeah.
We figure he's probably defending with all that stuff. Right. David Williams specifically on a min raise.
Neither player is thrilled with this card, but to be fair, there aren't many cards that either hand would be thrilled with other than making trips or 2 pair.
Correct. Maybe another ace. Both guys would be like, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's not a whole lot there.
So it goes check, check.
Okay. I'm fine with that. Right. Williams always checking, and Kuhn, very reasonable check back. We could get value on the river if we want to.
The river is the bone dry 4 of spades.
Okay. Just, we all agree with on that. At
yeah,
least,
yeah.
Right?
This is,
so
this
the board is now 8-6 ace 5-4. So 8-6-5-4 ace with 3 spades now. Yeah.
So obviously it brings in a flush and a 4 straight. It's super dry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so dry. Here's where things get whack and weird.
Okay.
So again, William says 10-8. I'll restate the board even though we just said it. Ace 8-6-5-4. Backdoor spades come in.
Yeah.
Williams bets 350K near full pot.
Yeah.
With 10-8.
Yeah.
He has a showdownable hand.
He does. He wins.
He has a good bluff catcher.
He wins a reasonable amount of the time and has a good bluff catcher.
Why is he betting? It's obviously a bluff when he bets this size. He's not expecting to get called by a 6, right?
He bets 350 into 400. It feels like he's trying to get Kuhn to fold, right? He's not betting 150 into 400 to try and get a worse hand to call. Now, maybe he thinks he's going to triple reverse this shit, and Kuhn's going to hero because it's a more polarizing bet size. And so Kuhn might hero with the king five of hearts or something. But will Kuhn hero with the king five of hearts anyway? I'm not very convinced he
will. I think Williams is trying to get Kuhn to fold an ace. I think perhaps Williams' logic in the hand is that Kuhn would have continued betting on the turn if he had a bluff. So he has a lot more showdownable hands in his range, which include an ace and include better eights than David Williams has, and does include some sixes as well.
I mean, Kuhn definitely has some give-ups as well. He might just be like, okay.
But David Williams is from 2004.
Yes.
So he might not know about that.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's totally fair. I think we can also assume as David Williams that Kuhn has very few flushes in his range, right? Because he checked the turn where if he had picked up a flush draw on the turn on the ace high board, he almost always continues.
That's true. I think that if we disregard the hands for a second and just look at ranges, Williams is more likely to have a flush.
It feels like Williams has more aces, even though he doesn't have that many because he's 3-betting pre.
I mean, he's not betting 350K with an ace.
Just an ace. No. Yeah. You're right. Maybe ace is up.
Maybe ace is up.
Maybe.
That's the
probably he is.
Right. But Williams
maybe.
Williams does have more sevens because of the turn.
For sure.
And he has more spades because of the turn.
Yes.
So he has a range advantage on the top end here.
I think that's right.
So if we disregard his hand for a second, it makes sense that you would bet a big polarizing size when you have that type of a range advantage.
Mm-hmm. But we do want to think about where our hand falls in our distribution. And what we're looking to get called by and what we're looking to fold out.
I don't think he's
things.
Looking to get called.
If we're not looking to get called, then like there just aren't that many hands that Kuhn has that's better than ours. That there are overpairs between the 8 and the ace.
What about ace? You don't think he can fold out an ace?
An ace often bets the turn, not always, but I don't know if he can fold out an ace. A good ace? Maybe a bad ace. A good ace? I guess a good ace is going to have to think about it, right? It's 350K. Yeah. It's nine blinds. It's a reasonable chunk of Kuhn's stack. Yeah. Is Kuhn really going to fold top pair to David Williams, though? I don't know.
I mean, on this board, he's supposed to sometimes.
I mean, it's a bad run out for a lot of hands, including Kuhn's actual hand.
I mean, whether or not David Williams is getting the same level of folds as other people, he's not going around thinking that he's getting looked up every time he bets.
Of course not. And he isn't. Of course not. I would be concerned, though, that hands like Ace X are not going to fold.
Well, this is a terrible bet if that's the case.
But that maybe we could fold that over pairs only? And if that's true, that doesn't feel like there's enough
combos,
there. Right.
Not enough
it seems like a mistake. If we can get most of the aces to fold, this is looking a little bit better. I don't know if it's good enough because I think we just win enough of the time just by checking, either bluff catching or mostly going check, check, I would think, and we just win.
Let me ask you this because I think you're a little stuck on his hand.
Okay.
Would you like this bet if he had 9-10?
Yes.
Despite you thinking that you can't get aces to fold?
Yeah. Because now we can fold out a bunch of other hands that are beating us.
Yeah.
Like, we're beating a six, and we're beating... Like, king five suited makes a lot of sense. Play just like this for Kuhn, right?
Sure.
Kuhn bets the flop, gets called, checks back. He gets showdownable, and or reasonable showdown. Like, he had king high, but whatever. Makes a pair, but it's a bad pair. Checks back. Probably going to fold if we bet 10-8. If we have 9-10, it's a great thing to get him to fold king five. But getting him to fold king five now, if we have when we have second pair, is no victory at all.
I think the crux of this hand is the turn and what it means about Kuhn's range. I think maybe Williams is assuming that Kuhn is almost always checking back a one pair ace, whereas you have the opposite assumption.
Yeah.
So that assumption looms large as far as the efficacy of this bet in general.
Right, right. Yeah. Maybe because of the sit-and-go nature of this and the relative short stackage-ness of all this, and even like the fact that Kuhn has to win means Kuhn is going to be careful on some of the more marginal things, or at least Williams believes that. So like, I think good aces, if he has like ace-jack, I think he's betting the turn most of the time. But he doesn't have that much ace-jack, even when he has aces, right? He has like ace-deuce, ace-three, stuff like that.
There's
too,
more combos of ace-deuce than ace-jack, yeah. Because, you know, the deck, they don't want to... They don't want the deck to be overpowered.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Okay. There's actually mostly good aces now that I look at it, right? Because it's either a straight aces up or ace deuce, ace three. Yeah. Everything after that is ace nine or better. So there's just better. So most of his aces are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think he's checking back ace deuce, ace three. Let me say that.
Okay.
But there aren't enough of those for that to make this bet worthy of trying to fold out the ace. I'll grant you.
Right. So, but maybe he is checking back a lot of his big aces too.
Maybe. Maybe he is. I would think against David Williams, he's mostly betting that, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. I mean, David Williams is always going to go for it with air if you give him a chance to. So that might be a reason to check back.
You figure he doesn't have that much air on ace 6-8.
Yeah. And that's why I came with 9-10. 9-10 is the remaining air.
Yeah. Yeah. 9-10, maybe 4-5. Maybe. Maybe not. 9-10's the best air hand.
4-5 is two pair now though.
Oh yeah. 10-7. There's not much there.
No, 7's a straight.
Damn it. It's 9-10 only.
Are you a poker guy?
You didn't even know for a second. You're like, yeah, it's a straight.
But I figured it out faster than you.
You wrote the hand down. You watched it. I'm just living.
So you're saying I did all the work.
Yeah.
And you did nothing.
Correct.
Including contribute strategically to the podcast.
I came up with the whole you're going to live forever, kid. I feel like that is a massive contribution. The incredible bulk thing. Remember that? Is he man or is he monster? Is he both? That was on me, bro.
Yeah.
What else? I don't understand what you're asking for.
Cogent poker knowledge.
That's what you're for. I'm the guy who just talks.
Okay.
I provide the steady stream of white noise.
All right. No matter our opinions on the hand,
I
believe that Williams thinks that Kuhn has more aces than you think Kuhn has.
Okay, fine.
Otherwise, I think Williams doesn't know what the fuck he's doing, which is another possibility. Because if he thinks Kuhn is checking back, not checking back with an ace on the turn very often, then this is risky. It's a risky bet because Kuhn's going to have to call with some stuff that isn't super strong. And an ace is a pretty strong place to start with the not super strong stuff.
Yeah. Like, what is Kuhn's calling range?
Well, let's talk about that because now it's Jason Kuhn's decision. So let's figure out how we decide on this because this is not a great spot now. Although you may not like Williams' bet, I'm unclear on it. It seems like it's probably a good time for it. We found like a spot where we're basically pipped.
And it's like the perfect bet, it feels like, actually, considering the hands.
All right. Of the things that aren't auto raises, which I'm going to say are like good flushes or auto raises, and straights are, we get questionable, and low flushes we get questionable.
Yeah.
We have some auto calls, like two pair, probably just have to call.
Like four or five. Four or five could be.
So that's the worst possible two pair. So
yeah, but we play it just like this until. Are we calling four or five for sure? Well, okay, that's the worst possible two pair. Fine.
Yeah. I mean, it starts around there. The auto calls start around there.
Yeah, I don't think it's an auto call with four or five, but we'd probably find a call because maybe. Is David Williams ever just betting an ace here? Probably not.
All right, so once we get past the things that are like pretty simple decisions, how do we make decisions about which hands to call with that aren't the like strong value hands, like two pair?
Right. Well, the obvious answer, of course, here's some cogent poker analysis for all you idiots out there, that's right, I call them idiots, Grant.
Okay.
I don't care anymore. You know, do we have any relevant blockers? And of course, we, as Jason Kuhn, we do have the King of Spades in our hand. That is a relevant blocker here for sure. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Now, often we might not think about that in terms of a call as opposed to maybe a good card to bluff with. Like a raise might make more sense than a call.
Well, but we have, we have the eight with it.
Right.
So we're trying to raise to fold out what?
We'd be raising to fold out like two pair, but it's David Williams.
Wow. Yeah.
We should not do that.
The raise is a bad idea.
Yeah, because we're either winning or we may not be able to fold. I mean, he may call ace jack if we raise. He's David Williams. So let's not do that. Okay, good.
A lot of reasons he probably doesn't have ace jack, but I agree.
Oh, right. Yeah. Agreed. But whatever. Whatever his best ace is. Maybe that's ace three, but whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So having relevant blockers is the obvious answer, though. Why? So having a seven, well, that would be a straight. That's having a nine would be pretty great, though. Having a spade would be pretty great. Those are the obvious things, right?
Yeah. The nine, I think, is somewhat irrelevant.
Yeah, you're right, because the seven's a straight anyway.
Yeah.
You're right.
I mean, we block the nut straight, but who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, and not on a three flush board, especially. But I think, yeah, the King of Spades is a relevant blocker, and we have an eight with it. Would we rather have ace king with no spades or this hand?
I don't know. Would David bet for value with a bad ace? Would he bet this size?
I'm going to go no.
I don't think he bet 350 with
ace. So then we'd rather have this hand.
Okay.
We'd rather have any one pair hand with a spade, maybe. Although, as we can see,
that isn't going to work out for us, right? Yeah. David is doing like a weird mergey bet, it turns out. Now, does he know he's doing that? Unclear, but that's where we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, certain heroes would really work out for us as David Williams.
Right.
Pretty beautifully. But yeah, I think we'd rather have the spade in one pair. I think we'd rather have king six with the king of spades, even though we'd lose this time, rather than having ace king with no spades.
Does anything about David Williams' story smell funny if you're Kuhn?
I mean, the only thing that really shows up for me is, what is David trying to get value from? You know, he's betting almost pot.
You think this is just the wrong size for value?
I mean, if we're willing to hero, maybe not, but Jason does not have a strong range at all here. Jason almost never has a flush, and he almost never has a straight, right?
Yeah.
So, and he almost never has a set, and he almost never has, like, he can have some two pairs. Like, there's just not a lot there.
Yeah.
So, like, he's pulling out the bazooka when we got, you know, just a little shanty town here. Like, is that a good metaphor?
I don't know.
Not sure either if that was reasonable as a metaphor. But, so that's the only thing, but you know, people do choose polarizing sizes sometimes with value because a hero is a hero, right? Like, if you got the right hand to hero with, you pay him off anyway. In fact, the polarizing size means you can hero,
right?
So you can make the opposite case too. But that's the only thing, is our range looks so weak. You know, I wonder if we bet 200K if it's a more believable
Yeah. Yeah, I understand here. I asked you the question, but I do to try to find something about his story that was off, but I think that's a little nitpicky.
I agree.
I think his story is pretty reasonable for either a flush or a straight.
Especially a straight, honestly. Yeah. Like a straight, really, 6-7, 8-7, 9-7, 5-7, it all makes
sense. Right, the flush he has to fall backwards into, but it's definitely possible.
It's possible, it's just harder.
Yeah.
Right. Because he doesn't have ace X of spades almost ever.
Right.
So he can have it, but it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It feels like a fold, even though it's David Williams.
I think it's a fold.
But Jason Kuhn calls.
Jason Kuhn finds the fucking call. When I was watching this live, meaning when I was watching it, because it was on YouTube, it wasn't actually live. But it was released
live. It was like in your life, it was live.
It was live to me.
If somebody was watching your life on TV, they'd be like, that's when he saw it live.
Well, no, they could be watching me live watch that. Yeah, yeah. So that's live.
Yeah, yeah. Truman Show style.
Yeah. Right. No. Anyway, I didn't really think Kuhn could consider calling, and then he starts talking, and I'm like, God, is he actually going to maybe call? Because I was like, it's like raise or fold, right? With this hand in this on this board with the King of Spades? And we talked about it more, and yeah. I sort of get why he didn't find a raise ultimately. Mm-hmm. But it still seems like such a stretch to be able to find a successful call here. You know, when these chips really matter.
He found it. He stretched and he found it.
He found it and he's right.
Yeah.
It's amazing that he found this call and was correct. I'm like kind of blown away.
I got to believe that if he didn't have the King of Spades, he would have folded.
I believe that too. And I also got to think that something about David Williams helped him make this
call.
Could
be a physical thing.
It could be a physical thing. It could be something he knows about Williams and Williams' tendencies. Like he's firing away on a lot of, when he doesn't really know what to do, he's going to fire away too. Mm-hmm. You know, like we see that with some players.
Yeah.
It's like, well, the board is rough. I don't know if I'm ahead or behind or what. I'm just going to bet, so I don't have to think about it, right? And if we know that about David Williams, that makes this more of a call because that means David Williams could be doing with an 8 or a 6, just a naked 8 or a 6.
Yeah.
And again, we can eliminate most aces. Of course, Williams isn't repping an ace. He's repping a straight or better, right?
Yeah, he really is.
It's a weird spot. This is really, I mean, because he's right, it's a superstar call. If he made this call and was wrong, though, I'd be like, what the fuck is Jason doing? I don't understand, you know? So it's really interesting that He really thought about it, too. It isn't like he just threw it in. He wasn't frustrated.
No.
He really took his time. He really thought about it, and he made what is just the right decision. It's Which, fucking cool.
That's what Jason Kuhn does.
I mean, he's Kuhntastic. Hey. First time, no rehearsal. I say fuck second take. 90s baby scratching on vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second.